Agenda paper two, in the hope of being the last time we see what we thought was a simple little issue about depreciation. Denise?
Thank you, Wayne, and good morning, everybody. The objective of this paper is to provide a recommendation to the Interpretations Committee for finalizing the proposed amendments to IS-16 and IS-38 to clarify the use of methods of depreciation and amortization. In this recommendation, as you have seen in the paper, we have considered the comments and observations that expressed by the committee members at the July meeting. The main features of our recommendation are to emphasize the principle for depreciation and amortization. We have eliminated any contradiction between the guidance in the standard and the guidance in the base for conclusions. We have prohibited the use of revenue as a proxy for consumption. And we have made clear the prohibition of the use of a revenue-based method. We also provide, in addition, guidance in cases in which intangible assets generate multiple different cash flow streams in various different markets. Our proposal is to split the cost of the intangible asset into different components and then to amortize these different components separately. We are also reiterating our proposals to remove the proposed guidance with regards to the diminishing balance method and including set some clarifications to some paragraphs in IS-16 and IS-38. And we are also proposing to apply this amendment prospectively. We have included some questions to the Interpretations Committee in page 14 of this paper, addressing the points that I have just mentioned. We would like to hear whether you agree with our recommendations and whether you have any further comments for finalizing this proposed amendment. Thank you.
Marantz?
I disagree. Continue to disagree with what is being proposed. I find that the sentence in proposed paragraph 62A and 92A 98A that talks about pattern of consumption versus generation of the asset is confusing. I disagree with the outright prohibition of using revenue as a proxy for reflecting consumption of the asset. I find that the arguments explained in the basis for conclusions are very weak. What it is explained is in BC33B, for example, of IS-16, that sometimes, it says sometimes revenue is affected by inflation, and then it concludes, therefore, this justifies an outright prohibition for using revenue as a proxy for reflecting the consumption of the asset. That's the reason given for this prohibition. I continue to agree that inflation or revenue-based or revenue used as a proxy for reflecting consumption should not encompass things such as inflation. So I completely agree that things that reflect inflation should not be used for the consumption of the asset. But what I believe is true is what is reflected in the basis for conclusion of IS-16, paragraph 33C, that is to say that the method of amortization should reflect the asset's expected capacity. So we want to reflect the asset's expected capacity. And in some cases, particularly for intangible assets, the asset's expected capacity is best reflected by looking at the pattern of revenue. And in an environment such as Europe, where inflation is very minimal, it's not big, really reflecting inflation through, it's not an issue. There is no issue for inflation. And let me take an example. If I have a 10-year license with the government that specifies for toll road, say, that specifies that for the first 5 years there will be a price and for the next 5 years, that price will be doubled. Let's assume we are in Europe, where inflation is not an issue, very minimal, or has very negligible effect. For me, it would be appropriate to reflect the fact that I'm consuming more that license in the last 5 years compared to the first 5 years. Because if I purchase the license after year five, surely what has been consumed with the first 5 years is less from what I'm going to consume in the last 5 years. So price consideration, particularly when it is contractual, should be considered. And so this is why also I disagree with what you have proposed in paragraph 98b, inserting that limiting factor. What is the limiting factor? It seems to say that when you have a setup date, then time would be the limiting factor. In my example, I don't think that time would be the limiting factor. I think that possibly the limiting factor would be the price. And this is what should be taken into account in order to reflect the consumption of the expected of the use of the expected capacity of the asset. And I also disagree with your proposal for multiple activities, what you propose in paragraph 98b. I don't see a master movie. I see a master movie as a single thing, and I have difficulty identifying components, particularly when it has been produced. I think that going the way forward you propose would lead to an arbitrary allocation, would lead to complex calculation, and would require complex system changes for what? And I've been discussing doing a small outreach before that meeting, and I'm not sure that this would lead to meaningful outcome. Finally, I think that this, what you propose, would introduce significant differences with US GAAP, particularly in the movie industry, and I'm not sure it is worth introducing those differences. So for all those reasons, I think I cannot support what is being proposed. My suggestion is to clarify in both standards that what we are after is inflation, that the pattern of consumption of the asset should not reflect explicit or implicit inflation, that should not be one of the components that should be taken into account for the pattern of consumption. And focus on saying that we want to reflect the use of the expected capacity of the assets. That's really what we are after.
Point of clarification. Appreciation in U.S. GAAP is a policy choice, not an estimate. And as a consequence, the two standards are not really similar at all today. So
that's what the industry is telling me.
Yeah.
The industry is telling me at the moment are consistent.
The application is consistent.
Okay. Let's see. I've got Kaz up next, then Luca, Scott, Andrew.
I still prefer focus on. I appreciate that thing, inserting the principle that is a depreciation is a consumption of the economic benefits. So I'm okay with adding that paragraph 5.6c and intangible assets of 92. But my first preference is just stop there rather than adding 62a or 95a and limit and add some. We have some rare cases that revenue-based amortization is Okay. So we are just adding some more clarification. We just, I prefer just stating the principle as an economic consumption is the principle. So I think that is my first preference. But based on the discussion in the past, I'm okay with adding some wordings more, but I think we still have some issues. It's very confusing. And the other thing is I disagree with adding that separating the components of intangible assets. That is practically very difficult and confusing, and I think it's just a fundamental change of the standards. I just stop here.
Kluka?
I disagree with the proposal of the staff, and I share the majority of the comments made by Laurent. There are two. I would like to add some other elements, because I think that the issue is very relevant and could have real relevant impacts. The first one is that I don't like the idea to include something that is more similar to a rule-based approach in a standard that is a very principle-based approach. I know that the effort is a big effort to try to balance between the two, but when I was looking at the proposal of the change in IAS 38, I had the feeling that we are introducing something that is more similar to a rule, and we missed the targets of our amendment to clarify which are the underlying principle for the definition of the amortization. I share the comments of Laurence that the reasons in which we try to explain why consumption is different from generation is very weak. And if the only issue is relating to inflation, I think that there are other ways to look at the issue that can be better clarify which are the underlying criteria that we have to use. I don't like the introduction that we made regarding the limiting factors. I think that is a very big change. In any case, if we are going on the streets, we have to, in my opinion, to expose the item. I had a chat with some friends involving in some and other entities, and they are very worried about the idea to include this limitation and this factor that is creating confusing. At the same time, also the reference to split the assets in several different criteria, the same assets for the amortization, is very complex and creates the use of material level of judgment. That is something that in this part of the standards, I think that we have to limit or to at least to reduce. The last comments regard to the fact that if we look at the experience that many preparers had faced in the application of IFRIC 12, in which they have transformed something that is tangible, the networks for distribution, in intangible, not necessarily this has determined the change in the way in which they look at the amortization. If I look at the gas market in general, all the entities that I have seen has maintained an approach to look at the amortization on a more tangible assets criteria, looking at the expected time of use of the pipeline rather than to look at the concession, because this is also what the authority that determines the tariffs use and have clearly established for the consideration of the way in which you have to look at the business. So I think that we should be very careful in providing a very different approach looking at the IAS 38 and the IAS 16. I think that there are some elements that could be overlap one on the other. That means, in my mind, that we have to look more on the principle and to be sure that the consumption is the criteria, but we have to really bet better explain what is the difference between consumption and generation, and which are the cases in which generation is equal to consumption.
Scott?
I have been far more positive about this than the last three speakers through the entire process, and continue to believe that prohibiting revenue-based depreciation and amortization is the right thing to do. I'm intrigued by the concern people have with the discussion of the limiting factor. Certainly it is new discussion, but I would have thought the limiting factor is exactly the way you figure out what consumption of the benefits inherent in the asset are. That is, if you buy the right to do something for 3,650 days, that is to say 10 years, then you consume 1/3,650th every day. I would have thought that would be the logical starting point if you were trying to figure out what consumption of the benefits of the asset were. Now, if you're trying to figure out how much money I can make from using that asset, sure, then you would jump to revenue. But that's not what you're trying to figure out, at least I don't think so, based on the principle. So I would have thought that the limiting factor guidance actually flows directly from the principle. Now, the guidance hasn't in the past and wouldn't, I don't think, with this amendment, prohibit you from deviating from the limiting factor think if you have another basis of depreciation and amortization that you believe is more logical. But I'm surprised that the limiting factor discussion has generated so much concern. As for the other piece of guidance in here, piece of discussion in here that's new regarding componentization or something similar of intangible assets, that certainly is new, and I think we discussed this a bit at the last meeting. Correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think the intent of this was to require componentization. It was just a suggestion. Those of you who believe that it is too difficult to come up with a single method, here is one way you might do it. Certainly in real life, these assets are componentized all the time. I mean, people sell off the rights to show a film on television, so somehow they figure out what that's worth. Now, granted, they don't have to do it for every film, but certainly that gets done for business, so the suggestion that it can't be done or that it's too hard to do surprises me. In addition, the current application of amortization by requirement in the U.S. and by practice under IFRS for films is to project all the revenue from the film. Really, you can do that, but then you can't split it into pieces? That surprises me. I know folks in the film industry, and I've seen the way they do these projections, and the projections are from theaters, from television, from DVD sales, from licensing of characters. They don't just do one revenue estimate that takes into account everything. It can't be done. Of course they think about it that way. Now, granted, they're not thinking about it in terms of then using it to split up the asset, but they are using it to book the amortization because they have to take actual revenues as compared to total expected revenues in order to get the numbers. I don't see the componentization thing being harder. It is different, but I don't see it being harder. So, that all of that being said, there are some different words that I would prefer for some of this. And going back to the exposure draft wording would not offend me either. But I hope we don't drop this, because I do think that revenue-based methods are, in the vast majority of situations, not consistent with the principle. And yet they are being used like a policy choice, which in the U.S., as Wayne points out, it is a policy choice. It's not, you're not directed to choose a method that purports to reflect anything. So I hope we don't let that kind of thing continue under IFRS.
Okay. Andrew, I think you're next.
Well, I largely support the staff proposals on this. I think compared to the previous version, there is more emphasis on the principle and focus on the fact that what is egregious is a method that is based on generation of benefits rather than consumption of benefits. I do think we need to be, if we're going to prohibit a particular approach, we need to be a little bit clearer on what we are prohibiting, what we mean by a revenue-based method. And I have sent some drafting suggestions in to that effect, which I hope will be helpful. I do share the concerns or the concerns expressed by some over the proposed componentization guidance 98D of IAS 38. You know, I think you can get to, in particular circumstances, a componentization approach already under the standard. That's not prohibited. This particular drafting is expressed as an accounting policy choice. It's a different componentization principle to IAS 16, which I realise it has to be, the former being based on physical consumption or replacement. It uses words like identify and identified. I think that's probably a different concept. I'm not sure if that's the same concept of identifiability as is expressed in paragraph 12 of IAS 38. So I think there's a source of confusion there. So if that language is to be retained or something similar to it to be retained, my suggestion would be to put that into the basis for conclusions and just explain there's not a prohibition in the standard on some form of componentization depending on the facts and circumstances. But broadly, I think this does properly focus more on the principle, and I think hopefully we're getting close to finalisation on this one.
So do we. Tony?
I also like the direction of the work that the staff has done. I have a couple of comments, but first maybe just a question for Denise around the componentization. And I just wondered, as part of doing this, have you done any outreach to folks in the industry as to how they would see it? No. Or thought about the potential consequences of componentizing intangibles beyond this specific issue?
No.
Which is one of the concerns I have. Luca mentioned IFRIC 12, where this is an issue. And I just wonder whether the idea of componentization is something that ought to be explore more widely rather than introduced in response to a very specific question about revenue-based amortization that originated in toll roads, and whether there's potentially a much broader issue with componentizing intangible assets. And so that's why I just wondered whether there'd been any broader thinking. More generally, I think the articulation of something that's closer to a principle in 98B around the limiting factors, that seemed to me to be a positive step in identifying what it is that actually limits the benefit, and so that's going to identify how you're consuming it. And so that that step I think I support. And generally, I think revenue-based amortization is inappropriate, and I think that's a step in the right direction. I guess where I have reservations is I think 98A and 98C are effectively rules that say revenue-based amortization never works except for this rule where revenue-based amortization might work. And I wonder whether having two rules either side of the principle is necessarily helpful, and whether it might be perhaps a better approach to maybe develop the principle a little bit or illustrate it with a couple of illustrative examples or explain the basis rather than have two rules in the standard. So I support the direction, and I think something that's going to make it clear that revenue-based amortization will often not be the right answer. But I'm just slightly uncomfortable with having two rules. And then as far as the componentization goes, yeah, I think they can clearly do it. It's what they do today in order to estimate the amortization. In fact, if anything, this would be slightly easier because they'd have to do it once to do the allocation rather than update it every year to calculate the amortization at the moment. So I think they could clearly do it. My concern with it is more around the broader consequences, and perhaps we shouldn't rush into having a principle for componentizing intangibles without having looked at intangibles much more broadly.
That was not our objective at the moment. We didn't do any outreach in that respect. I had a brief chat with the revenue recognition team. I understand that they explore it very briefly as well. They also found it was complex. It could be complex in some situations. And basically what I did in this paper is just I took that comment because Scott expressed it at the last meeting, and I tried to include it as part of this.
I think I understand that it reflects the, to an extent, the conversation we had last time. And so I have no doubt that these things, that they can be separated, because certainly in entertainment and media, they sell pieces out of licenses all the time. So it could be done. My concern is more around unintended consequences, for example, in connection with IFRIC 12, if we talk about separating licenses, and that there's probably a slightly broader piece of work there.
Now, going ahead with it. As Scott mentioned, it is not a requirement. It's just something that they could do.
Mm-hmm.
But we are not specifying how they could do it.
Yeah,
I know that might sound incomplete, but it's just some alternative that we are providing.
Yeah, and I think where I would be troubled, it's not a conversation for this meeting, but I think most service concessions are single assets with a single right to charge the customer. And I personally would be slightly troubled by the idea of componentizing a service concession and how that would interact with the service concession guidance around renewals, expenditure, and providing for it. And I just think there's a risk of creating something of a mess in other aspects of intangible assets accounting.
Philippe, board member privilege.
Yeah, 2 points. First, the follow-up of Tony's remarks. I'm not sure I understand at this stage why this componentization idea would be restricted to intangible assets, and why we don't have a broader look at whether a tangible asset might also, in terms of the consumption, also have some similar patterns to what you propose for intangibles. It's not clear from this paper why you look only at intangibles.
Well, it's just mainly because this issue was identified through the common letter analysis. Some respondents, more specifically in the entertainment business, raised this issue, and that's why we included it.
I understand where it comes from, but in terms of standard setting, I think we need to have some consistency in our approach, and I'm not sure I've seen an analysis explaining to me why we should restrict that idea to intangibles. So it's just a question. If you were to proceed, I would think that at least we need to have an explanation of why this pattern of amortization would not also apply in certain cases to certain tangible assets. I have no specific example to propose. I have not seen an analysis of why it would not apply.
Well, isn't it already a requirement in 16?
It's a different type of componentization in 16. It's a different one. It's a different pattern of componentization. You have different physically identifiable elements which have different useful lives, and you amortize them over different useful lives. Here, it's a different approach. It's based on the output or input or whatever. So I think it could be complex, possibly, to combine those two ways for tangible assets. But at least I would like, if you come to the board with this proposal, to see why or what kind of collateral effect it could have on tangible assets. Second issue is wording of the Appendix B, the proposed wording about inputs or outputs. In comparing the wording for intangibles, paragraph 98A, and the wording for tangible assets, which is 62A, some appendix, I'm not convinced that we have clarified enough
especially for tangibles, where the it seems to me that we have some apparent inconsistency between 62 and 62A. In 62, we say a unit of production method is okay, and it can be determined based on expected use or output. Output is okay for a unit of production method. Some people may read this output as being generation, as meaning generation of economic benefits. Output is a measure of the generation of economic benefits. It's a physical measure. When you put a monetary amount, a price on it, it becomes revenue. And we say physically determined output is okay, but monetary determined output is not okay because of these price effect changes. And that seems to me, we on 62A, we say, well, revenue not okay, because it is a measure of the generation of economic benefits. If output is okay, why is revenue not okay? Because the price effect and the price change. And that needs to be absolutely clear to explain that those two paragraphs are not inconsistent. And your first sentence in 62A says it's not okay because there is an interaction between units and price. I'm not sure it is interaction which is a problem. It is the fact that the price might change in a way that has nothing to do with the physical output. It's not interaction. So I think we need to do some further work on the explaining that concept that physical output is okay, but monetary value of physical output is not okay because the price may change and maybe reflect inflation.
Okay. We got Tony Charlotte.
Okay. I guess I share sort of the concerns that we seem to have gone a step further in saying we don't generally think revenue methods are acceptable because of these reasons, to saying they're prohibited. And I would rather say we don't generally think they're acceptable. Otherwise, I think we end up with a conflict. I mean, when I read 98A and 98C, they seem to be actually conflicting rather than two separate rules. 98A said you can't use revenue. 98B said you can in these circumstances. So I would rather, if 98A or equivalent 62A had been written as that you generally can't when this is the case, then they would it would feel like it flows in it and it meets all the requirements. So I also thought the componentization element was a slight surprise to me. It seemed a bit that it could have other effects. I wasn't sure if it would only have an effect on people who are currently using revenue-based methods or could have a wider-reaching effect. And I wasn't even sure if it was necessary, if it was implicit that you could use that anyway. And did we need to make it point and draw it out more? Was it too much emphasis placed on that?
Mm-hmm. So for my tally, are you generally a yes with edits, or are you generally a no?
I think I'm a no. I think it's a fine line, but I'm a no. I'd rather go back to where we were, that you are allowed to use them, but there should be rare circumstances.
That puts you in kind of in between, for my count at least. Lawrence, I want to give everybody else the first chance. Reinhardt?
I'm generally supportive. I think the proposed amendments are moving in the right direction, and my comments are very similar to the ones that Tony made. My biggest concern is relative to componentization, similar to the concerns that were expressed, although it may be done in certain industries, and I think it was intended to focus on one particular type of an intangible asset, like film rights. I'm concerned of the broader effects and unintended consequences, such as structuring opportunities that people might see in being able to componentize, and also the interrelationship with impairment testing. I'm not sure. There may be some issues there that we need to think through. So by introducing that, if it stays in the proposed amendments, I would be more in favor of, as Tony said, getting some input, because it wasn't in the original exposure draft. So that, as I say, is my biggest concern on the proposed amendments.
But you would describe yourself taking, if we just took componentization out, because this is a perfect example of no good deed goes unpunished. You'd be generally in favor? Okay. Joanna?
I think perhaps just to sum up, to start with, I would say I've moved from a no to a maybe in favour. So, but because I think that adopting the principle, I would, and part of me, what I was going to say was, I actually just think we should drop 98D. I don't think that it adds anything to this particular project around the componentization. It's got some issues. I just think we, yes, some submitters raised it, but I think it's got, we should just drop it, would be my recommendation. I am, Philippe's comments around 98A and the equivalent 62A, I actually agree with the comments that Philippe has made there around is it the interaction and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to get the words right. I also wonder, within 98A and 62A, we start that by saying a revenue-based amortization method. We're fixing on this revenue-based thing. If we simply said an amortization method that relates to price and units, and that price doesn't reflect the output, that is not taking into account, or that doesn't deal with the consumption argument. I actually think that we are then again setting the principle as opposed to actually saying this thing that people call revenue-based. So I think that would help me to get there to effectively turn 62A and 98A more into a principle around that. And then, and I do agree that 98B, I think that limiting factor, whether the words could change, I actually think that that is, so I disagree with Lawrence there, I think that can work. And I think that if 98A is turned into a principle, then I think 98C can actually, if you like, build on that principle, because I don't think it is, say, it's not contradicting what 98A would say. So if all of those things are changed, I think I can get there, because it is not, it's coming back to being principles-based as opposed to rules-based, and that was my concern on day one.
Okay, Laurence, you're back on.
Two comments in reaction to what have been said. The first one is about the limiting factor in 98B, or the reference to limiting factor. I have difficulty understanding what it is, particularly in the context of how the staff is presenting that limiting factor when you have contracts for a time period. Does the fact that you have a set-up time period require you to use passage of time as limiting factor for amortization or depreciation of the asset? Or can you have something else? I thought you could have something else, because IFRIC 12 and concession arrangements have a defined set-up time, and we know passage of time is not necessarily the best measure to reflect consumption of yes. That's my first point. And coming back to the latest comment from Joanna, I'm still confused. In my example, where I have a 10-year license, where with the government, with price is twice as much for the last 5 years, would you consider that the limiting factor could be the price restriction to reflect the consumption of the asset? If sure. It is so, then I possibly can agree. But for me, my reading is very confusing, and I had a more straightforward reading. My second comment comes back to componentization, and I agree in that respect with Tony and Reinhardt about be cautious about componentization of an asset into a bundle of rights. I've just read the discussion paper on the framework, conceptual framework, and there is a section about units of account where it says that the ISB has not concluded whether the unit of account should be the single asset or whether you would componentize an asset into a bundle of rights. So I think that introducing the componentization of the asset into a bundle of rights would be preceding the work of the IASB. And indeed, the componentization that is being proposed by the staff, I see it very different from the componentization that is being expressed in paragraph 13 of IAS 16, where the componentization refers to parts of some items of PP&E may require replacement at regular intervals. So the componentization refers to an element of the asset that you can remove and replace. Here, this is not the same when we are talking about intangible assets. So this is why I'm extremely concerned and careful about moving into the componentization of an intangible asset into a bundle of rights.
Scott, do you want to come back on that?
Yeah, just to respond, I think Lawrence kind of looked at me when she said that about limiting factor. I would have thought in a situation where, I think parent the example you used earlier, you've got a right to do something for 10 years, but the first 5 years there's limits on what you can charge, and then the last 5 years there's either no limits or different limits. I actually would have thought in that asset, I would push very hard to componentize, because my asset the first 5 years is very different than my asset the second 5 years. The first 5 years, I have a right to do this and charge up to 100. The second 5 years, I have a right to do it and charge whatever the heck I want. Very different. I cannot think of a way to come up with a single amortization pattern that would make sense there, unless I believe the market price is actually 100, in which case straight line would probably work. But it's just, it's very, very different rights there, so I would have wanted to componentize that.
Doctor?
How are you?
Apparently a drinking problem. Wrong pipe. Absent componentizing, I would absolutely try to pick a method that takes into account the price limiting factor as well. Because I have different rights during different terms. So I would think you have to take that into account.
Then maybe in agreement.
Tony, Luca, and I'm going to see if there's a way we can put a ribbon on this.
You don't need to come back on Joanna's thoughts, because I think that what I said was I perhaps lose 98A and 98C because they read at the moment like rules. And I think if there is a way that they could be reworded so that they are consistent with the principle, because I like what's in 98B about limiting factors, and I agree with what Scott said, that the limiting factor isn't always going to be time. It might be quite often, but it isn't always going to be time, and you can envisage a situation where it isn't. And so if 98A particularly was crafted in a way that makes it consistent with that as a principle, I think I would definitely support that. 98C seems to me to be a very remote fact pattern. I know it's there to illustrate a point, but if instead of having a very specific and remote example, it could be articulated as an example, as a in a way that's consistent with the principle, then I think there's a way of sort of pulling the three together. And I think I like what Joanna said as a way forward.
Luca, last call.
Only two comments. The effect of this discussion in my mind is that I don't know if it is really appropriate to specify the elements of limiting factors, and for we had said before, the elements relating to the components of the items. In my mind, we have to stay very carefully on the principle-based approach. What we are trying to do with these two paragraphs is to look at what are rules that can be useful to determine which is the consumption. This is, in many cases, an industry-driven component, and so I think that we have to come back and stay with more attention on the principle, because the limiting factor regarding the time is not necessarily the appropriate solution if you have another element that can be more useful to determine which is the consumption. In my sector, in the oil and gas industries, it's common to have a concession for some years, but at the same time, the best way to amortize is the unit of production, because at the end of the story, you have reserves and there are determined amounts of barrels under the ground, and that's the items that you have to look. And there's nothing in connection with the time of the concession that you have received. I add another element. The elements of concession all have a tangible assets. It's only linked with the different jurisdiction in which you work. At the end of the story, you have always a reserves. And so you have to look at the substance. So I think that there is the high risk that if we include this kind of guidance, we could create more confusion to prepare a more principle-based approach. The second comment is that from the discussion that we had this morning, I'm thinking that probably the best way is that not to prohibit to cure the application of a revenue-based amortization approach, but to indicate which are those elements of revenue that you have not to consider in order to apply appropriately a revenue-based approach to be in line with the consumption criteria. This is a thing that we have to make, because the discussion that we have is in the majority of cases linked with the fact that we are worried about the inflation effects or other effects that are not linked with the consumption. One could think that if I'm able to eliminate these effects, I could create a mechanism, a system, and a methodology based on revenues without this element that already reflects the level of consumption. So I think that not necessary we have to make a statement that revenue-based is not appropriate. Probably we have to say when and in which way revenue-based can be used.
Okay. This all seemed so simple when we started on it. What we're doing is reporting back to the board for the recommendation. My tally shows three basically no's. The other comments basically yes, and Charlotte's I wasn't quite able to characterize. So one thing that did come through as clear that we need to report back to the board. Well, the board has not seen the componentization ideas, so taking it out will be kind of neutral to them, except to the four board members who are at the table here, so that's not a problem. My view is that it would have been permitted anyway, so this was designed as a useful comment, but I understand the concerns about not going someplace without understanding all of the implications of it, so I think the broad view of the committee is that we take that out, Denise. Uh-huh. I thought Joanna had a helpful comment that probably also responded to Tony and to a lesser degree Reinhardt's concern of making those three paragraphs more coherent, the 98s more coherent with each other, especially just taking the label off, which on the surface of it seems, well, why, but then when you read the paragraph again without the label, it does seem more principle-like than it did before. So my sense of the committee is that the broad view of the committee is that the board should proceed. The paper for the board will note what I call the three no's. And in particular, Laurence, if you can help by giving Denise an articulation of your view, so that in the paper that goes to the board, they have that. Does anybody object to that course of moving ahead? Other than the fact that the three of you don't like the basic answer anyway. But okay, that's what we'll do then. Mm-hmm. Can we promise the committee that they will never see this again?
I hope so.
Actually, we've gotten that promise before, and the board has responded by saying, take it back to the committee.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.